hopefully what AI should do is allow you to have more nuance. It will allow you to take care of the simple stuff and allow people to spend more time on the more complex, nuanced parts of it.
Welcome to the podcast that brings you the most important conversations in property and surveying. We talk about new technologies, we talk about the latest trends, and we talk about the role of our industry in achieving net zero. I'm James Beverley, Senior Associate at Fisher German. Welcome to Fisher German Talks. Today, Fisher German Talks AI. Artificial intelligence has been around for a long time, but the release of free-to-use large language models, that's ChatGPT amongst others, has led to an explosion in interest and hype around AI. The use cases for AI in our industry are exciting, but what exactly are they? What role does AI have to play in the future of planning and development? I'd like to throw that question straight out to our first guest. Joss Pink is founder and managing director at Landstack, who launched their AI-driven platform in 2019. Landstack uses data to better inform planning decisions. Joss, welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here.
We'll talk about Landstack in a bit. But first things first, is AI going to take our jobs?
Good question. Quick answer is no. Obviously, it's going to have a massive impact on jobs and sort of everyday life. But I think especially in the short term, it's not going to take people's jobs. But I think it's a real risk if you don't necessarily understand what's going to happen with AI, that there is a large potential that, you know, you might get left behind, if that makes sense. So it will make people a lot more efficient. It will make certain tasks a lot easier. And I think jobs will definitely need to change. In our industry, in terms of software development, for example, it's often like the sort of canary in the coal mine when it comes to artificial intelligence. And we're seeing massive change just in the way that you actually go about developing software, the way that you go about building these sorts of things. And I think if it's anything like that, pretty much a vast majority of other industries will sort of be affected in a similar way. And that can be from sort of the large language models that everybody knows, but it could also be through to any other form of sort of AI, which can, you know, you'll see in self-driving cars and you'll see in sort of any sort of machine learning technology, image recognition, video generation, and so on.
Yeah, as I suppose in some respects, it's in the same way Uber didn't get rid of the need for taxi drivers. Yeah. I know it's not necessarily AI, but
yeah,
it's technology
It's a really good analogy. I think like the biggest analogy I think of in terms of where we are with AI at the moment is I always think of large language models as Wikipedia back in the day, only because, you know, really useful resource, but also there were quite a lot of issues with it, right? It was an open source resource for sort of information and you could go to it and you could get facts. Those facts weren't necessarily true a lot of the time. And often like people then said, oh, well, you know, you can't trust it because nothing is correct. And I think obviously the analogy is that actually a large amount of it would be useful, but you have to understand how the technology works and understand its limitations. And so the Uber example is another good example, right? Which, you know, it massively changed the way an industry works, but it's not like taxi drivers were put out of business overnight. Obviously, a really important thing to think about as an analogy, which is useful there in terms of AI, is self-driving cars, right? Yeah. So there will be, and you know, if you look at anything going on in San Francisco, Cruise, or even Tesla, you know, they're building self-driving systems. Now, obviously there is an element there of, you know, people being replaced, but the key thing is that those fleets will need to be managed, they'll need to be maintained. You know, there's probably quite a likelihood that instead of you doing the driving, you will own the car that you can then lease and sort of set to deliver people and sort of deliver rides, right? So the key thing there is things are going to change and jobs will change. But if we think about sort of planning and development, right, fundamentally, the sort of things I see is a lot of stuff will get easier. And a lot of the what we used to think as maybe grunt work will get a lot easier. Hopefully, if things go right, we should see a massive efficiency boost across the board. It should be much easier to get documents written. So planning applications, reports, site assessments, all this sort of stuff should become much easier to write. And in theory, people who are, you know what they're doing, surveyors and so on, should essentially be able to do more of what they're paid to do, right? To have the opinions, to provide the advice, and to do so in a much more informed manner. You know, whereas before they might have to spend hours researching and understanding a site, and then also putting reports together and writing them, they should have that reduced to a fraction of the time. And that's hopefully what we will see. And the hopeful part of that would mean that everything becomes a bit easier.
I suppose one thing is there a chance, do you think, that the move towards AI and the efficiencies that would bring in a zoning system, we could see this reemerge again? Because the way I see it, and maybe this might be oversimplifying a zoning system, but when you have a zoning system, an application has to, if it's within certain confines, is just fully acceptable.
Yeah.
It takes the decision-making process where one of the frustrations we deal with as planners is even an application you think accords with policy.
Yeah.
Policies are often vaguely worded and, you know, subjective. Mm. So we, you know, some application we say is in accordance with a policy, but goes to councillors or planning officers and they take a different view. But is the efficiencies of AI something you think could actually bring, you know, future governments, if not this one, back towards?
It definitely could, right? And I think you do see it in a lot of the sort of more recent approaches to when people have been describing policy and so on. Maybe take BNG, for example, right? BNG in the biodiversity metric as a sort of premise can be from a, obviously you have to get an ecologist to go and visit the site, but to do sort of initial appraisals and things like that, you can have quite a decent data-led approach. And as data gets better, then you will be able to do even more of that, if that makes sense. So I think yes is the answer. I think there's nothing wrong with that as a principle. What it should mean is that for specific types of policy or things that you can go towards different zoning strategies. I really like the idea of sort of immediate outline consent on allocated land, right? I think, for example, something like that makes total logical sense if you want to do a plan-led system and if you want to do pass the responsibility to local authorities and local people to make the decision, right? So I think that makes a lot of sense. And so from that point of view, I think you could do a lot of automated decision-making there from an AI point of view as well, right? Check, is it draft allocated? Is the permission exactly what the draft allocation is said to be allocated for, right? Does it meet some of these other criteria? I think there's some hoops you could jump through there quite quickly, right? If you think about what local authorities struggle with, chronically underfunded from that point of view. They don't have enough staff. They don't have enough time to spend on things. If you can take away the simple decisions and give, you know, the various different people within the planning departments the time to spend on the nuance, I think you will end up with a better system. And, you know, I think something we've spoken about before is also trying to get potentially, I would say, pushing towards smaller applications to be automatically decided in some shape or form. I think there's sort of advantages there too.
I suppose the interesting thing coming back to, will AI take our jobs? The issue in some respects is there aren't enough planners to do these jobs. So it's not even like there's jobs being taken. It's a job being fulfilled,
100%.
Which I suppose is a more exciting way to look at it.
No, absolutely. Look, hopefully the advance in AI, every planner will sort of be able to do 10 times the amount of work that they previously could do, right? And it's not like that they'll be stressing hard to get that done. It will just be much easier. And that's the aim. I think we could hopefully see that. There are obviously, you know, there's negatives to it. And the one thing I don't like talking about, but you probably should, is that, you know, you have to have some element of caution, right? So I think that's, if I was going to say one thing, I think we tend to go really from one extreme to the other, which is AI is going to take all our jobs and then, oh, it's useless, right? And I think the reality is almost somewhere in the middle, right? Which is it is going to be incredibly useful, but you do need to understand how the tools work. You know, I think a lot of people will throw out the idea of hallucination, if you're familiar with that. So if you're using, like, let's say a language model, a hallucination is something where you'll ask it a question, it will provide you an answer, which is not based in any form of reality. It's just made it up. Just statistically speaking, the words that it said match the question that you've asked, right? Those are issues that happen, right? But I think then that then can becomes the boogeyman, which means, oh, well, we cannot use that because there's a risk of that. Whilst if you understand sort of generally speaking when those things happen and that you need to kind of double check things, as you kind of would with any kind of work you're doing, then you still get the huge benefit from it.
In terms of planning specifically, I suppose, where else do you see things going in terms of short-term uses?
So short-term, I think you will see a huge amount of, like, large language model-powered uses. I think you'll see a massive improvement in sort of like the report style. Probably see some more stuff from us soon on that respect. So you will see some larger improvements there. As the models get better with maths, you'll probably also see valuation. Reports and writing become a lot easier. It's kind of a sort of meeting of two things. As the data is getting better, that's kind of been one of the things that we've really strived to, is provide really high quality data, because that's fundamentally the underlying information that you can then apply to AI and language models and things like that. So like things like valuation, you'll be able to do much quicker. Even if you want to do correspondence with landowner or stakeholder, you will be able to draft documents, letters, emails much more quickly because you will have, you'll be able to do it based on the site that you're talking about and the planning history, if that makes sense. There's programs we use in software development now, which essentially just glorified autocomplete, right? But they use large language models to autocomplete huge amounts of code. And there is definitely in the sort of slightly longer but short term, the potential for a lot of that to be happening as well, where you'll start typing a sentence and you'll be saying, I've got a bit of a concern about the land because of the planning application. And then it will say, suggest the exact planning application and potentially what the concern would be, right? Yeah. There's a lot of things like that, which probably will be happening in the future.
One of the tools that's coming out is Copilot,
yeah,
I believe, which is kind of, as I understand, more relates to the user.
Yeah.
But I swear, one of the uses I was thinking of is, obviously, you know, I for planners who work across multiple areas, you may be making the same arguments again.
Yes.
Be quite nice if when you just start typing it, quite often I'll have to go back through my emails, find out what I said, because I've said, you know, I've seen this version of a policy produced by a different council.
Yeah.
My argument against it is going to be the same.
Yes. Yeah.
Instead of me, you know, manually going back in, if I just start typing it, if an AI in the background could say, I recognize this.
Yes.
You know?
No, so 100%. Absolutely. And there's like, so... to give you a bit of an idea, there's a huge amount of work being done in how to properly like store data and like your data, for example, emails and so on, to make it really easy for an AI model to then associate with, right? So if you start typing that, it will know, oh, I've seen that same argument here and here and here. But then crucially, kind of one of the big things then, and from our point of view, the way we think about it is, even if you haven't necessarily made the argument before, has the argument been made before previously in another planning application, in a similar application, potentially even in the same local authority, if that makes sense? So there will be like a almost certainly an absolute minefield of data issues when it comes to combining sort of, let's say, Fisher German data or your data with other data as well, and how that works, and how sort of products have access to that information. Copilot, for example, will almost certainly be able to access your emails and your previous work. But are there arguments that have been made in a decision appeal that's just been decided in the last couple of months, which actually are really relevant? You know, for example, one of the big things I always think about is like 5-year supply arguments, right? And I think that's going to be really, really relevant with the new changes that the Labour government are making. You know, planning by appeal has quite a large chance, I think, of coming back.
Yeah.
So those sort of things are going to be really important. And so if you're saying, oh, I think the 5-year housing land supply is this, right? Or, you know, actually the local authority have demonstrated one, you want the AI to then be able to say, actually, no, an appeal's just been lodged, making an argument that the land supply is actually a 4.2, not 5.3, which is what the local authority is saying.
Yeah.
So it's things like that, I think, which, like a concrete example, it seems very doable, right? And like, not that far off. And hopefully then that's the other part, which will just make you more informed, right? So then as soon as you have that piece of knowledge, you can just give way better advice. But that's the beauty, is then that's over to you to put that into an argument to make the advice.
Yeah. And I suppose it's five-year land supplies and interested in one. And you've gave the example of, well, you can now, there are models and there are tools you can use to ask what a local authority's 5,000 land supply is. And then, like you said, that my AI might mean actually you can keep that up to real date.
Mm.
I suppose the interesting thing as a planning professional is, we don't take what others say as a given.
Yeah.
And you know, part of, you know, and we've done this with colleagues recently, is actually we will go through every single site in the supply and look at their assumptions, look at the planning status.
Yeah.
To me, that seems like the next step up.
Yes.
Do you think that's something that's within reach?
Yeah, I do. Definitely within reach. Again, you're relying on the data. Mm. So it'll be within reach in a number of different ways, right? So it will definitely be easier for you to just do that piece of work just straight away.
Yeah.
Right. One of the big kind of problems, you want to get into the depths of that sort of data, is it's actually quite difficult to track completions.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In terms of how many houses have actually started being built as well. Right. So a lot of the time people will drive to the site.
Yeah.
Right. And that, you know, you are properly, the big problem you have there is data.
Yeah.
Right. Land reg you can rely on, but it's really, really out of date a lot of the time. Satellite imagery, again, you're relying on, kind of can be out of date. You're looking at it and you don't think they've even started building it, and you visit the site and they've got 50 houses up. Right. So that would be maybe kind of one of the more difficult, more nuanced bits, which you still might need to get in your car, or maybe send your Tesla to go and look at the site for you. Right. But that's kind of one of the things that you'll struggle with. But I think that you'll be able to get better approximations, more up-to-date approximations, and that there will be some assumptions in there, but you'll definitely be able to get more accurate data. And I think fundamentally what that should mean is that local authorities are held to account much quicker. And then hopefully the key thing here is we don't want this to be as a one-sided thing where it just gives sort of the private sector the ability to really put pressure on the local authority. Hopefully that means that the local authority can see that problem coming much quicker, right? They can look at the deliverability of what they've got in their local plan. Local to where I am, there's an allocation that's massively behind in Cirencester, a huge allocation, and the local authority, like, they probably are aware of that, right? But that should be like really obvious. It should be really obvious how that's going to affect the five-year supply, and it should then be really obvious, okay, well, how are we then going to amend that? I think it should hopefully mean that then, instead of then windfall sites just going up willy-nilly, the local authority should be able to be, this is pipe dream stuff, but a bit more proactive, right? If you see what I'm saying.
Yeah. Engage, like, you know, see the writing on the wall and then
exactly, right.
An and then saying, okay, well, this might be required to.
Yes, exactly, right. Maybe they need to do another allocation SPD or something like that, right? You know, anyway, you can get the idea. I think that would require, again, a slightly different planning system potentially in terms of changes. But I think that will happen, I hope.
So in terms of planning decisions, we discussed, you know, the ability for AI maybe to determine simple planning applications. But in terms of more complex planning applications and kind of leading on from what you've just said before, how do you think AI can help planning officers and members?
Yeah, I that's a really good question. I think I kind of alluded to it before, but I do think that you will see the sort of smaller, simpler, quote unquote, applications be helped more to begin with. It's not to say that the larger ones won't be helped with, but I think in the short term, what I would expect is that artificial intelligence AI will hopefully allow local authorities to spend more time on the big stuff, right? They don't at the moment.
Yeah.
And so even if it just does just that, that would be huge. But it will be able to help. So, you know, simple things that will be quite easy for people to figure out potentially will be sort of affordable housing mixes, you know, whether the scheme complies to the sort of housing market assessment documents that they've done and they're sort of wanted their housing mix and things like that, right? You'll be able to do things quite simply there. I will say there are also sort of AI implications when it comes to design of schemes and sort of creating infinite variations of where the houses can go, how many homes you can fit on a site, where the infrastructure can go and so on. So I think there'll be huge changes there too. And potentially tools that can let you draft sort of infinite variations or the most, let's say, economic or, well, it depends on the variable that you want to measure, but potentially the most cost effective or efficient or eco-friendly. Yeah. You know, so there'll be loads of improvements there as well. Getting it into the hands of the local authorities will be the key thing because I would be, and it almost certainly will be the case that the private sector will adopt this information first and the local authorities will then be trying to catch up with it. But yeah.
I suppose it's government probably led.
Yeah.
One question I have, which is, I suppose, going on from the question earlier beyond LLMs, is how good is AI now at dealing with imagery?
Yeah.
And I suppose one example could be, I think you referred to it in the BNG element, but, you know, how good is it with plans and things? And, you know, because, you know, for example, BNG is a really good example. Another good example is, you know, a lot of local authorities will say, if you're having X number of houses, you need 0.6 hectares of amenity space, how good is AI currently and how good can it be with that kind of data?
Yeah, I would say it's good. It could be significantly better. One of the key things maybe for this is because it's, and this is one of the things that planning will, I think, struggle with, is that it's a small industry in comparison to other industries. And so you will see, like, you will almost certainly see technology where they're using image recognition, things like that. And you're like, God, that is unbelievable, right? Mm. How can we not get something that can just do something like exactly what you're saying? And often that's just a form of training that needs to happen. And someone needs to sit down and put together a model and train it and get it right. But the quick answer is it should be able to do a lot of those things, right? Even without any of the sort of transformer technology or anything like that, you can still do really good image recognition on land cover, for example. So like I was saying, like habitats and things. I would suggest that the one thing that you will see is like it is not going to be a linear trajectory in terms of improvement. So it's going to be exponential in terms of how much better these things get, right? And so I think the expectation should be that won't be very difficult to do, those sorts of things. Having said that, again, it depends on the data, right? So you can have great satellite identification of land cover, but if your image is old, it's just going to be wrong, right? Yeah. So that's kind of one of the fundamental bits, and like that's why kind of we do what we do, and we're quite well positioned, is that we are trying to do the data side, like in some ways the really boring part, and no one really finds that interesting. But your AI model is so dependent on decent data. A lot of improvements are being made in trying to make it so you need less decent data. You know, nowadays you can, what's called, fine-tune some of the large language models from OpenAI and so on, and you can get really good results with just a small bit of training. But even so, you do need sort of decent data for that. And if you want to get really, really, really good results, you need a good amount of data.
And ultimately the planning is, you know, even pre-AI is data-driven, and you'll make better decisions with better evidence.
So
in that respect, it hasn't changed. Going to the kind of the plan point, I've seen, I don't know why it comes up on my Facebook, I've seen a tool, it must be American because of the development types and stuff, but you take a site and it will auto generate it, and it's clearly American because of the amount of parking and because of the development type, but but then you can just drag the buildings around and it will kind of mold the parking around where you've dragged stuff. So like, and I think ultimately that's, you know, I have a lot of value in master planners, and I don't think they should be replaced. I think they're same as planners, they bring a lot to the table, but from a concept point of view of, you know, if you're doing something, you know, you're looking at a site at the beginning, you're just wondering how many units you can get on there. If you could use a tool to just generate a starting point that maybe a master planner could evolve.
No, 100%. So, and that's where a lot of AI will come in to start with, will be not, it won't do everything straight away, right? And there's a huge amount of like aesthetic and so on and so forth when it comes to master planning and sort of what humans like, right? But absolutely, that's where AI will flourish, will be, look, I just need to get a quick idea for how many units I could fit here, even to get an idea of optimum versus other different setups and what your sort of range is, how much you could fit on the site would be. Yes, absolutely. There are a couple of companies that are kind of doing that sort of thing. One is called Blocktype, actually. So Ewan Mills, who used to be part of the government, set up a company to do that, which people can check out, free shout out for him. So there are people doing it in the UK. The one thing I will say again is that it's kind of annoying about the UK is we are like a small market. Yeah. And because of the planning system, we're also quite niche, right? You know, it's not like you can build something that works the UK planning system and go, great, we can go and put that in the US. It's all different. Yeah. So it might well be the case that we just need like really clever people who just are passionate about planning. Niche group of people, but they exist to do it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I suppose that's quite exciting though, because you can't cookie cut an American or European fix. It's going to have to probably be British driven.
Yeah.
If it's particularly if the system doesn't change. So that's an opportunity for British.
Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. I think that'd be really exciting if that's the case. It's cool just to think about it that way. I think it's an interesting one. As with everything, people will use kind of like what's the simplest, easiest tool. Yeah. The American ones would, I think there's a good chance that like things like that would sort of work.
Yeah.
Right. And then the question is whether people can then go, okay, great, that gives me a rough number. I don't care. That's kind of where the sort of, but I agree, it would be cool.
So Joss, would you be able to talk a bit about your platform and the role that your platform and your competitors can play in the space?
Yeah. So the problem that we started solving, and I mentioned it a couple of times today, is the data problem, right? So a lot of what we do is we digitize a huge amount of sort of local authority data and provide like a standardized set of that information. So across the whole of Great Britain, you've got all the local plan information, all the planning application information, all the constraints, comparables, and so on and so forth. So it's like a one-stop shop for all that information. But then it also, then we empower that data with tools, right? So that can be AI tools, it can be GIS tools, it can be sort of like site finding tools. To give you an idea, like we just released a couple of weeks ago, like an AI powered site finding tool that essentially allows you to type in like the criteria you want. So for example, I want to find land between 5 and 10 acres on the edge of a settlement that doesn't have planning, but is draft allocated. Or for example, show me a site that's good for a care home. Show me a site that I could fit 5 houses on that's brownfield. You get the idea. So you can kind of just type in what you want. Again, this is the beauty of large language models, and then you can get the answer. So that's kind of, and the problem we're solving really is like a couple of different things. The main one is, first of all, is like data. Right. So empowering professionals like yourselves to get the information much more quickly, much more easily, and then do whatever you want with it. And then kind of what we're working on now is obviously then trying to apply artificial intelligence to a lot of that data. So, you know, you can then make your job a lot easier. One of the big things that we're going to be releasing soon is essentially a chatbot in a similar sort of vein to like your ChatGPT or Anthropic or even Gemini, Google Gemini, where you can ask a question, except that you choose a piece of land. And then the model has obviously all the power of the language models, but also all the information about that piece of land. So everything that you'd get on Landsac and more, really. And so what that lets you do is it lets you build financial models for the site. So it can give you like a land value, for example, based on build cost, surrounding sale values, and then all the different local plan policies. It can give you a planning statement, which is something that we've built a version of and we're going to be upgrading. And any other question you want, where's the closest school and how long does it take to walk there? Where's the closest shop and how long does it take to drive there? And questions like that. So that's something that we're going to be releasing quite soon. Kind of gives you an idea about sort of what our sort of short-term and long-term aims are, really.
It'd be, I suppose it'd be interesting probably for even like counsellors to,
yes,
to kind of have this technology and they can take it, you know, because they might have hundreds of questions and they might not feel at a planning committee meeting or they might not feel their plan officer has the time. But if they can, you know, program the site in and just
ask it questions. Away. Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the big things, I went to UK Reef earlier this year and I was hounding local, anybody I saw with a local authority badge on, because we just released the planning statement at that point. But what I was going to try and say to them, I just wanted their feedback and kind of, I wanted to get an idea for if they'd thought about these tools. Because even if you're trying to put a local plan together, one of the big things is, I mentioned Call for Sites and Schlar. You should be able to start from a baseline of, here's all the facts about the site, here's everything we know. Then the person who's building that document can then go, great, I've now got all the information, I just need to provide the opinion, right? As opposed to, I've got to collect all that information about every single site.
That's probably benefits and consistency. That's one of the things, you know, unfortunately, one of the things with human assessments. And, you know, when you look at local authority, that might have to be assessing hundreds, if not thousands of sites.
Yes.
If we look at it and we say, almost unfairly, we look at our one specific site and we start comparing it to other ones. And if there's inconsistencies, we're like, well, 100%. You gave that site that mark and this site, you know, why have you scored our site inconsistently? It's a bugbear, but it's also the nature of the beast when, you know, humans are looking at thousands of sites to stay that consistent. So there's potentially an opportunity there to, you know, produce robust documents that are difficult to challenge.
Exactly. Right. And if I'm honest, that's one of the huge things. That's almost the reason why we started our company, right? Was I looked at, so my background quickly, my mom, we built the tool initially for her, really. So she's a land agent, right? Okay. She does Stratland. I used to watch her get really, really fed up with the sort of politics and also just the sort of lack of fact-based exercise when it came to why you should or shouldn't go after a site. Now, take it with a pinch of salt. She obviously thinks her sites were the best, right? But I think kind of when I looked at it, the biggest problem I found was that it didn't feel like there was a sort of robust exercise when it came to evaluating a site's potential. And in reality, there is a correct answer, right? Yeah. When you look at any sort of settlement, you can see where the infrastructure is. You can see where all the different constraints are. You can see where planning's gone previously. You know, you should be able to see what the sort of various different capacities of schools and things are and hospitals. There is a correct answer to that. And, you know, in the future, there should be, if we want a plan-led system, right, empowering local authorities to be able to much better go, great, we know from a fact point of view, this is where the sites lie. Now we can get into the interpretation and potentially the reasons why and why for and why not we'd want to do X or Y. But that's kind of been one of the huge drivers behind why we set Landsac up in the first place. Initially, I did think we'd probably get it done within 6 months, and it's taken about 5 years. But
that sounds like planning all over.
Yeah, exactly.
You think you're doing 6 months and then 5 years later.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Right, Josh, thank you for that. That's all we've got time for today, unfortunately. But before we finish, I've developed a little test. This is my second Fisher German Talks podcast, so I think I can call myself a host. But before I end today, I want to try a little challenge. I've got an ending statement, and I want you to say whether I've wrote it or whether it was written by ChatGPT. Joss Pink, thanks so much for joining us on the show today. We've talked AI, we've talked planning, and we've talked the future of the industry. To our listeners, thanks for being with us, and you can find out more information by going to fishergerman.co.uk and search for our planning page. Joss, would you agree it's important to pink outside the box when it comes to using AI in our industry? Don't answer now. Pink it over. Okay, so were those terrible puns written by myself or ChatGPT?
I reckon it did feel a little bit ChatGPT. So maybe I'll go ChatGPT.
I thought you were going to get it there. The answer is a little bit of both. ChatGPT gave me the puns, but I wrote the rest of it. So I think my job's safe. Anyway, let's leave it there. So where can our listeners find out more on Landstack?
Yeah, so just go to landstack.co.uk. And if you're interested in at all using any of the stuff I've talked about today, you can just register there and get a free trial. And then if you want to sort of email or ask anything, you can email support@landstack.co.uk.
Thanks, Joss. See you next time.
Thank you.